It's nearly noon and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. 52 degrees in beautiful downtown Kodiak right now. The rain has slacked off a little, but we're looking for gusty, breezy conditions tonight. Your chance of precipitation overnight, 70%. Coming up on the Midday News, Kodiak has seen 9 new cases of COVID-19 in the last 4 days. Bills in the U.S. Senate and House would give the University of Alaska 360,000 acres of federal land to help support the school. Alaska Airlines is announcing layoffs. All that and more right after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. It appears President Trump can now count himself among the millions of Americans to be infected with coronavirus. The White House says he and First Lady Melania Trump have tested positive, and they're displaying mild symptoms. In recent weeks, he's been leading big rallies where mask wearing has been more of an option than a rule. NPR's Aisha Roscoe reports a Trump campaign now says it's postponing all in-person events, but some will move online.
White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany says that President Trump is experiencing mild symptoms, but she would not offer any specifics. She also declined to talk about when exactly Trump found out that his close aide, Hope Hicks, had contracted the coronavirus. Trump attended a fundraiser in New Jersey on Thursday after Hicks tested positive.
It was deemed safe for the president to go. He socially distanced. It was an outdoor event, and it was deemed safe by White House operations for him to attend that event.
McEnany told Fox News that the public should expect to see and hear from the president soon because he wants to talk to the American people. Aisha Roscoe, NPR News.
Vice President Mike Pence stood in for the president today on a phone call about COVID-19 relief. Pence tested negative. There's no change to his schedule. The Bidens have also tested negative. Former Vice President Joe Biden stood roughly 10 feet away from Trump at Tuesday night's debate, which was hosted by the Cleveland Clinic. Neither was wearing a mask on stage. Every other time, Biden does, and Trump poked fun at his rival for it. White House Speaker Nancy Pelosi waits for the results of her coronavirus test, and she says today's developments should be a wake-up call to anyone who has not taken scientists' warnings seriously.
Maybe this will be the moment where people will say, okay, mask, distance, sanitation, tracing, treatment, and also recognizing that many people in the minority community, people of color, disproportionately affected by this.
Pelosi on MSNBC. A federal judge finds that the Census Bureau violated a court order by announcing an early end date for counting for the 2020 census. Here's NPR's Hansi Lo Wang.
The latest court ruling by U.S. District Judge Lucy Koh in California comes after days of confusion sparked by a tweet from the Census Bureau announced an early end date for counting. The judge called the tweet perhaps the most egregious violation of a court order she issued last week that reinstated October 31st as the end date. Judge Koh calls the Trump administration's efforts to comply with the order chaotic and incomplete. Her new ruling reaffirms that the Bureau will have more time to finish counting every person living in the country, especially in tribal areas, rural areas, and other historically undercounted communities. Census numbers determine each state's share of congressional seats and electoral college votes for the next 10 years.
This is NPR.
In the past 4 days, Kodiak has seen 9 new cases of COVID-19. Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization reported 3 new cases today. Two of those are close contacts of cases reported earlier this week at the Coast Guard Air Station. The Coast Guard says it's moving quickly to contain the COVID-19 outbreak at the Kodiak Air Station. Six cases have been reported there. Two include children. Petty Officer Allie Blackburn says they are dependents of Coast Guard members.
Of the recent two, one child tested positive and one is exhibiting symptoms but keeps testing negative.
Blackburn says one of the children exposed to the virus attended an afternoon daycare center at the base, known as Child Development Center Annex. The Coast Guard has closed the facility and asked those families with children who are also in the program to quarantine for 14 days and report any symptoms of the virus.
And we also have on-base quarantine care teams to assist those families if they need groceries or medicine or anything.
Blackburn says other steps have been taken to prevent the spread of the virus.
Out of an abundance of caution, the air station personnel are all being tested.
The Coast Guard has also closed the base's commissary and exchange as a precaution.
I just want to stress that our base command and personnel are very cognizant of the COVID threat, and we're doing our best to protect our community and fellow Kodiak members.
A school near the base, Peterson Elementary, was closed on Wednesday after the Kodiak Island Borough School District was notified that a student had tested positive. The child is one of the six cases reported at the Coast Guard base. The school underwent deep cleaning and disinfection yesterday and is scheduled to reopen today, although close contacts of the child exposed to the virus must remain at home under a two-week quarantine period and take classes remotely. Petty Officer Blackburn said at least four crew members were involved in recent operations that took them off Kodiak Island, but none of these cases involved personal travel. Until now, there have been no cases of COVID-19 reported at the Kodiak Coast Guard base. Since April, there have been 80 positive tests in the Kodiak region. Bills in the U.S. Senate and House would give the University of Alaska 360,000 acres of federal land to help support the school. Like many universities across the country, UA was established as a land-grant institution, but through a mix of complex and conflicting state and federal laws, never got all the acreage it was due. During a press call Thursday, interim UA President Pat Pitney laid out the new bill's potential.
That amount of land on our land grant could provide long-term stability.
Pitney credited her predecessor, Jim Johnson, as well as Governor Mike Dunleavy, Alaska Senators Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan, and Representative Don Young for getting the University of Alaska Fiscal Foundation Act bills introduced. But she also cautioned that if it becomes law and makes good on federal past land transfer commitments, there will be no immediate yield.
It takes years and years and years to move from land to the endowment to the return on that endowment.
UA currently receives about $6 million per year from the lease, sale, and development of its existing 150,000 acres of land, a yield Pitney said the additional property would double. The university is also working with the State Department of Natural Resources to select which federal lands it would like to receive. Former DNR Deputy Commissioner Ed Fogles is assisting the UA in the process.
There's no Prudhoe Bay on state-selected land that we can just reach out there and grab and stick on the shelf, on the university shelf at this point. So there's going to be some unknowns with respect to resource potential. So we'll be looking at lands with potential that have the highest potential for monetization.
Fogles says the university has already made some draft selections, including 42,000 acres right off the Denali Highway.
It's probably some of the only land that's state selected, that's unencumbered by federal withdrawals on the road system in Alaska. It's highly scenic, it's beautiful country. So we chose three parcels up there to submit to DNR for their consideration.
It's unclear if the UA land bills would move during the waning weeks of the congressional session or be taken up during the next one. Alaska Airlines is cutting nearly 450 flight attendants and others from its payroll while the company is borrowing more than $1.3 billion from the U.S. Treasury. The company announced in June that it would likely begin cutting jobs this month. Airlines are struggling with a steep drop in travel due to the COVID-19 pandemic. That decline drove another Alaska air carrier, the Raven Air Group, into bankruptcy. Those layoffs are dwarfed by those at two other major carriers. American Airlines and United Airlines announced earlier this week that they will furlough a total of 32,000 workers. All three airlines are pushing for Congress and the White House to come up with another deal on coronavirus relief that would include grants to airlines, including as much as another $25 billion that would pay airline workers for the next 6 months. This week is Banned Books Week, an annual event that celebrates access to literature and information. In years past, KUCB has partnered with the Unalaska Public Library and its volunteers to bring the community's excerpts from banned books. In celebration of the event, KUCB's Maggie Nelson combed through some of those archival recordings and sat down with City Librarian Karen Kresch to discuss the importance of Banned Books Week.
I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings.
Absolutely true diary of a
the
part-time
color purple.
Indian.
Harry Potter.
The Handmaid's
Captain
Tale.
Catcher in
the
Rye.
Chatterley's Lover.
Grapes of Wrath.
A Brave New World.
Of Mice and Men.
Their Eyes Were Watching God.
Every year, books are challenged in libraries, bookstores, and schools by people who want to remove or restrict access to certain material. And in 1982, in response to these challenges and as a means to draw attention to the harms of censorship, the first Banned Books Week, which usually takes place the last week of September, was launched. Since then, people have been finding unique ways to celebrate the annual event. In Unalaska, City Librarian Karen Kresch says in past years, the library staff and volunteers have put together displays of books locked up in cages. They put together clues for the public to discover why the books have been banned and read excerpts over the radio of some of their favorite books that have been challenged
people
or banned.
In their homes had been. But she did look back, and I love her for that because it was so human. So she was turned to a pillar of salt.
But I did find an excerpt from Slaughterhouse-Five that I thought was meaningful, and that is a favorite book of mine. I think that he has a nice way with language that lends itself to reading out loud, too.
I'm supposed to look back. I'm certainly not going to do it anymore.
That was Kresch reading Slaughterhouse-Five, one of her favorites of Kurt Vonnegut's novels. She says Vonnegut is one of her personal heroes, and she likes the humor in this piece. Kresch has been Unalaska's librarian since 2014. Before that, she worked for the King County Library in Seattle. Kresch says that libraries, whether they are part of a big city or rural Aleutian Island, should be welcoming and inclusive. But, Kresch adds, they are not limited to a single person's perspective or preferences. In fact, there used to be a sign hanging in the back room of Unalaska's library that read,
"A good library has something in it to offend everyone." So just the same way that everyone should be able to find something they love, everybody should probably be able to find something that offends them or bothers them in the library. And that's just the nature of having a collection that is truly for the entire community.
Kresch says that when she's choosing a banned book to highlight or to read on air, she's looking for something that's easily excerpted, but also demonstrates how detrimental censorship can be.
I'm also just looking for literature that's beautiful, that's moving, that I personally find meaningful and I'm excited to share with other people, because I think that highlights the loss that the whole community experiences in places where this material might be banned from their school library or might be challenged or banned in their public library.
Kresch's approach to librarianship is multifaceted. If you have ever seen Kresch read to kids, it's clear she has a natural talent and passion for literature and education. But the exuberance Kresch projects during story time also evokes her avid commitment to equal and public access to information.
Libraries are founded on the principle of the First Amendment and free speech and free access to information, which is kind of a corollary of the right to free speech. And so it's a good time to remind people that that the library is an institution that's founded on these really lofty ideals and these American principles. It's not just a place to get some fun reading material.
He beat me today. In Unalaska, I'm Maggie Nelson.
I may have got something in my eye, but I didn't wink. I don't even look at men.
That's true. Seen All right. By Billy, the story went like this.
Read a banned American book this week. My favorite's Fahrenheit 451. In a new study, scientists have linked sea urchins, otters, and climate change to the destruction of reefs in the Aleutian Islands. The study says that uncontrolled by sea otters, their natural predator, sea urchins are devouring the massive limestone reefs surrounding the islands, a process exacerbated by climate-driven changes in the marine environment. Hope McKinney with Alaska's Energy Desk has this report.
I see a raft of about 10 otters trying to hang on to a kelp bed. Looks like they're about 25 yards out off of shore.
In Unalaska, rich kelp beds and curious otters line the island's shores.
We're pretty lucky here, especially in Unalaska Bay. We have a very healthy and what appears to be growing sea otter population, which is able to keep the sea urchins in check.
That's Melissa Good, the local marine advisory agent with Alaska Sea Grant. She says there are two healthy sea otter populations in the Aleutian Islands, here in Unalaska Bay and in Clam Lagoon in Adak. And she says the reason the population is healthy in Unalaska is because the otters are protected from orcas due to the infrastructure from the fishing industry.
We see the sea otters swimming around and hanging out and sleeping in the kelp reefs here right in Unalaska Bay, especially in the inner harbor areas, which means that orcas are not likely to come in and predate on them. And so they have protection.
But in other parts of the western and central Aleutians, starting west of Simalga Pass and the islands of Four Mountains, a sharp decline in the otter population from killer whale predation has led to a boom in sea urchins.
They can be ridiculously tense. Like, literally, you can find 400 in a 3-foot by 3-foot section. You can find 400 of these little urchins just sitting there trying to eat away.
That's Brenda Konar, a professor of marine biology at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. She says those sea urchins, which are tremendous grazers, began eating more kelp, which grows on the reefs, decimating the vast kelp forests that went on for miles in the Aleutian archipelago. Then they started eating the algae that creates the reefs.
So first the kelp forest disappeared. Now the reef underneath the kelp forests is disappearing.
Konar began diving in the Aleutians in the 1990s, just as the Aleutian sea otter population began to crash. She is also a co-author of the new study in Science magazine about what is happening to Aleutian reefs.
And what's happening is it's not just that there's a lot of sea urchins out there eating and sort of digging away at these coralline biogenic habitats, but it's actually the warming temperature and ocean acidification is weakening these coralline plants and making it even easier for the sea urchins to erode them away.
Konar says ocean warming and acidification are making it difficult for calcifying organisms to produce their shells, in this case, the algae's protective skeleton. And these large urchins are chomping away at a faster rate than the algae can grow. In some places, she says, reefs that are meters thick and thousands of years old are crumbling from urchins burrowing through the weakened calcium carbonate structures, and she doesn't know if the reefs can come back from it.
These coral reefs live hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And so if they're being eroded as much as they are in just a couple of years, and it takes them, 200 years to regrow that amount, even if everything stopped today and, the otters came back, the urchins got eaten up, and everything became rosy again, it would take these coralline crusts a really long time to come back.
Despite Konar's uncertainty, the study indicates that restoring sea otters could result in a decline in sea urchins and the recovery of kelp forests in the central and western Aleutians. For Alaska's Energy Desk in Unalaska, I'm Hope McKinney.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
The Midday Report on KMXT is brought to you in part by Ardinger's Fine Furnishings, where you'll find the Simmons Dual Comfort Mattress, allowing you to customize your sleep experience. Also featuring massage and zero-gravity chairs from the Human Touch Company and sofas and love seats by Stanton. 486-5554.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Wild salmon prices tend upwards in the global market. More after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. Online at alaskaboat.com.
Lower supplies of wild salmon by global producers are pushing up prices as the bulk of the biggest sales are made. About 75% of the value of Alaska's salmon exports is driven by sales between July and October. In the global commodities market, catches of wild salmon by the biggest producers are weighed down across the board. For sockeye salmon, market tracker Tradex reports that frozen fillets are in high demand and supplies are hard to source for all sizes. With a catch topping 45 million fish, Alaska is the leading producer.
Even though that's bigger than average, it's still down 9% from last year. And so with lower sockeye harvests coming out of Russia and Canada, we estimate that the global sockeye harvest was down about 26% in 2020.
Andy Wink is director of the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, speaking on the Tradex 3-Minute Market Report. It says that sockeye prices are significantly higher than last year and suggests that suppliers are stockpiling inventories in their freezers. Tradex correspondent Tasha Cadence.
Our recommendation for sockeye buyers is to secure your supply now. Sockeye prices are anticipated to make a good bull run before moving into a bear-type market.
Tradex predicts the same for wild chum salmon due to low catches from all producers.
Both from Russia and Alaska, where Alaskan fish will be shorter, and the estimated raw material pricing will go up to $4,300 per metric ton, which translates to about $1.95 to $2 a pound U.S.
The situation is similar for wild pink salmon. Prices have increased from $1.20 to $1.55 a pound based on metric tonnage. A weakening dollar also means foreign customers can buy more U.S. seafood for less. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
Fish Radio is supported in part by Joy Crafts, specializing in marine safety equipment. U.S. Coast Guard approved AMC instruction for commercial fishing vessel safety procedures and drills, serving Kodiak for over 25 years. 486-6293 at 445 Shahafka Circle.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
KMXT's Island Messenger, supported in part by the Kodiak Daily Mirror, your hometown newspaper since 1940. Now online at www.kodiakdailymirror.com.
Welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the second day of October, the year 2020. Sun rose today at 8:18, won't set again until 7:39 this evening. That will give us 11 hours and 21 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. We have a high tide coming up on the east side at 3:06 this afternoon. That will be an 8.7-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 9:14 p.m. of 0.3 feet. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, you have a high tide coming up at 3:35 this afternoon. That will be a 15.8-foot tide, followed by a low tide tonight at 9:50 p.m. of minus 0.5 feet. 52 degrees presently in beautiful downtown Kodiak. Only a 50% chance of rain this afternoon, and then another chance of rain tonight before 2 a.m., then showers likely after 2 a.m., mostly cloudy skies. The weather you see outside is likely to continue for at least until Tuesday. And look for gusty winds, gusts as high as 35 miles per hour tonight from the south. Looking at our marine weather, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 971 millibar low, 180 nautical miles south of Kodiak, will move northwestward into Bristol Bay, then inland Friday afternoon while slowly weakening. The front associated with a North Pacific low will approach the western Gulf Saturday afternoon, the front will push across the Gulf through Saturday night. Resulting weather not too good. Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak east side offshore, gale warning today. South winds to 45 knots right now, will diminish to 35 knots this afternoon. Seas to 26 feet on our east side for tomorrow. South winds to 25 knots, seas to 12 feet. But for tomorrow night, east wind to 35 knots, seas to 10 feet. Over in the Shelikof on Kodiak's west side, we have a gale warning today. Northeast winds to 35 knots will become south 25 this afternoon. Seas of 14 feet will subside to 7 feet this afternoon on the west side. For tonight, look for south winds to 30 knots, diminishing to 20 knots after midnight, and seas to 10 feet. For Saturday night, the Shelikof, east wind to 35 knots, seas to 11 feet. For Sunday, northwest 40, seas to 14 feet in the Shelikof. For our inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bays, south wind to 35 knots in Chiniac Bay right now, seas to 12 feet. For tomorrow, south 15, seas to 4 feet. Over in Marmot Bay, we have southeast winds of 35 knots and seas to 14 feet in Marmot Bay. Will subside to 7 feet this afternoon. For tomorrow, look for south winds to 10 knots, increasing to 15 tomorrow afternoon, seas to 3 feet. And for Saturday night in Marmot Bay, east wind to 35 knots, seas to 13 feet. So have a care, mariners. The Kodiak City Council will hold a work session next Tuesday. That's October 6th. The meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. in the Borough Assembly Chambers, or rather in the Library Multipurpose Room. The meeting is open to the public, but you will be asked to wear a mask and socially distance. For more information, call the City Clerk's Office at 486-8636. The Kodiak City Council is also having a regular meeting on Thursday. That will be occurring in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 7:30. Again, you will be asked to wear a mask and social distance, but it's open to the public. Call the clerk at 486-8636. Don't forget, Run the Rock registration is open. Just go to kmxt.org and look for the handy blue button on the right side to register. There's a marathon, a half marathon, a 10K, and a 5K to choose from. Plus, you have your choice of running in person or in the virtual race on the weekend. Pick the time and course in that case. Look for the blue Run the Rock button at kmxt.org.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181. Fax us at 486-2733 or email psa@kmxt.org.